Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 222 of Meat Trapper Radio. I am recently back from a spectacular trip that I took up to the frozen north, the far north of Minnesota. And I went up to the Boundary Water Canoe area with Patreon member Eric Duffy. And we had a marvelous time. It truly was an eye-opening experience for me. I know it's probably commonplace to Eric, as he lives up in that neck of the woods. But for me, I had never been up there, and I saw a lot of new things. I learned a tremendous amount from Eric, and I am in his debt. Eric, I owe you, buddy. And I got a little package coming your way as soon as I can find a suitable box around here to package this stuff up and send it up to you. But I'm going to do a bonus episode, Patreon-only episode, on all the gear that we used, the boats, the camping gear, the stoves, the whole nine yards, what worked, what didn't work, what I'm going to take next time, because I will be going back. That entire area up there is just an outdoorsman's paradise. We were up on the Canadian line, crossed over into Canada, and I had my picture taken on the monument and all of that. So it was great fun and just a wonderful, wonderful time. But I'll do a bonus episode on the gear, and then I may even do a bonus episode on some of the philosophical realizations that I came to while I was up in that wilderness. Because it's one of those things where you can't go up there and experience all of that and not be changed in some way. And I can assure you that my outlook on many things changed as a result of my experience up there. But enough about that. And since I was out of pocket, I apologize for the delay in responding to emails and messages and all of that. But I would also like to thank Mr. Brian McKee of SouthernSnares.com, of Sleepy Creek Traps, and of ThompsonSnares.com. Brian is the sponsor of this show, and he, in large part, is responsible for it being able to continue week after week, month after month, and hopefully year after year. I would also like to welcome all of the new members. We've had a lot of new people sign up for Patreon, and you guys be sure to avail yourselves of all the bonus content. There's the entire Resistance Trapping series. There's movies. There's books you can download. All of that stuff is up there. And if you have any problems getting to it or figuring out how to work computers or anything like that, just contact me. Let me know. Send me a message on Patreon. You just click the little message button and send it, and I'll get it. But we've got a good show for you tonight. We have got a great submission from Ken on goldenrod. And this is a plant that, it's so commonplace in many areas that people just simply overlook it. I know I was one of those people. Goldenrod is the official plant of the state of Alabama, where I was born, raised, and spent most of my life. And here in Tennessee, it also grows everywhere. And so Ken's got a step-by-step guide on how to use it, how to harvest it, how to use it, and what to use it for. So I'm going to share that with you shortly. Let's see. We're going to have some tips and hints on the backside of tonight's show from Nick. And then we are going to have an excellent submission about how to build a small farm in building block fashion. Ty sent us a wonderful submission here. And he describes very succinctly exactly how he started with a small farm and how he transformed it from basically an abandoned house and grown over piece of property into a functional homestead. So that's a great step-by-step guide for all of that. So we've got a lot to talk about. So let's see. Now, Ken was talking about goldenrod. In the past, I've talked a lot about foraging and about having stuff on your radar. You know, when you go out into the woods, you know, if you're hunting squirrels, you should also be scouting for deer, or, you know, scouting for trapping season, or looking for edibles, and just sort of filing things away and making a mental note. I do that a lot, you know, with mushrooms and everything else. And the thing is, the key to this is you have to have certain things programmed into your brain to be on alert for. At least I do. In other words, when I'm walking through the woods, if I'm going down into a ravine or something, you know, I'm looking for, let's say, mushrooms. I'm looking for oyster mushrooms. I'm looking for chicken of the woods, you know, hen of the woods, lion's mane. In other words, I have these species that are running through my head of, if this comes up in my eyes, you know, sound the alarm, sound the alert. Whereas, you know, other species of mushrooms that I don't eat or that are not edible, they're not even on my radar. It's like they don't go through the filter. And goldenrod was one of those plants that was never really in my filter, but I can promise you it is now. And as soon as I put that plant into my mental filter, I started seeing it everywhere. And I think that's a fascinating psychological thing to be aware of, is that I would drive down the road and never notice goldenrod. But once I put it in my mental filter, now I see it everywhere that I go. And so you sort of have to, at least I have to adopt that methodology. But let's see what Ken has to say. He said, I wanted to share my thoughts on goldenrod and how I use it for minor to moderate cuts, abrasions, etc. Let's see. Goldenrod is discussed at length in many places all over the internet, and I won't get into all the useful benefits of the herb, but I will recommend researching it yourself and get to know it well, because it is so plentiful and easily identified. Today I will discuss the use of goldenrod as a topical ointment or a salve. I have used this salve for many years with excellent results in all types of wounds. And just to stop for a second, yeah, if you look this up, man, it can be used for sinus infections and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's really, really good stuff. But he says, goldenrod has many properties that make it a great healing agent for cuts, abrasions of the skin, etc. A little research will explain the active components of goldenrod, so we'll not discuss all of that here. But when made into a salve, I think of it as nature's Neosporin. And that's powerful right there. I mean, think about that. You know, we all know what Neosporin is and what an effect it has on healing wounds and everything, but this is nature's Neosporin. He continues and says, it's a plant that is very prevalent in the South and really over most of the U.S., making it readily accessible to most people. It starts to grow in early summer, but doesn't produce a flower head until late summer or early fall, when it's most noticeable in overgrown fields and roadsides. And let me just interrupt. That's true. Right now is prime time for goldenrod, at least where I am here in Tennessee. The yellow flowers, it makes it just stand out like you wouldn't believe. So he continues and says, it thrives in full sun, so you won't find it growing in deep woods or even in areas with partial shade. It prefers open, overgrown fields. The best time to harvest it for its healing properties is in the early fall when it is flowering, i.e. right now. Both the flowers and the young green leaves on the top one-third of the plant can be used as medicine, both internal and external. Now, when it comes to how to harvest this, he says, when harvesting, wait for a sunny, dry afternoon after the dew has evaporated. You don't want water on the leaves and the flowers. I cut the top part of the plant about one-third of the way down the rod, preserving the flower head as well as the younger, more tender leaves on the upper part of the stem. Now, what you're going to need to make this the salve is this. You're going to need 4 to 5 stalks of goldenrod, basically enough to make, 3/4 of a cup or so of chopped leaves and flowers. Okay, you're going to need some sort of cooking type oil, like olive oil, vegetable oil, etc. You know, preferably olive oil. You're going to need some beeswax because we're going to make a salve, and if you can get pelleted beeswax, that's easier to work with. And then you're going to need some sort of like a 4 ounce thick walled glass jar, like a small mason jar or something, preferably with a lid and a ring and all of that, to seal it up. So those are your supplies of what you're going to need to do this. So you got your goldenrod, your olive oil, your jar, your beeswax, and all of that. So after you harvest the 4 to 5 rods, you allow the plant to hang in the shed for 12 to 24 hours to make sure it's good and dry. Some shriveling of the leaves and the flowers is fine. It doesn't take away from the benefits. And once I'm certain that it's completely dry, because water and oil don't mix, so you don't want water on the plant, I strip the flowers and the leaves from the rod, starting at the top at the flowers and pulling down the rod between my thumb and forefinger. I place the leaves and the flowers in a bowl, and I start a quarter cup of oil or a half cup of oil, and it's your choice of oil, but olive oil is preferable. And I start that over a low simmer heat on the stove in a stainless steel pot or pan, because you don't want this stuff to react with anything. Now, while the oil is heating up, you go ahead and cut the leaves and the flowers into small pieces, like a small dice, like you're dicing onions or something. And this is done to increase the surface area. Okay. Now, at that point, you add about 3/4 of a cup of the chopped leaves and flowers to the oil, and you start stirring. Now, I always put a little more leaves and flowers in than I have oil, because I want a potent salve. When the oil starts to simmer slowly, I remove it from the heat for a minute or two and stir. Then I put it back on the heat until it starts to simmer again. Then I remove it from the heat and stir again. What I'm doing here is to not let it boil or burn, but just keeping it on a very low heat to keep any volatile compounds intact. Let me just interrupt here. That's critical, because you're not trying to fry the stuff and all of that. You want the oils to exude, not burn it up. So while we are creating an infusion, just speeding it up a bit with the heat. This is not a recipe you can let it go on the stove while watching the Trump rally. I'll keep applying heat to it and stirring for about 35 to 40 minutes. In other words, you're giving it a good amount of time to be in that hot oil, that warm oil, and to let this stuff infuse out of the plants and the flowers and the leaves into the oil. Okay? Sort of steeping in hot oil, if you will. Then I turn off the heat and I let it sit and steep for about an hour. If using a clear oil, it will turn a green-brown tint after heating and steeping. Next, I strain the oil mixture through a fine sieve that removes the leaves and the flour and into a 4 ounce glass jar, like a little mason jar. This is where I had my beeswax. Now, I use beeswax as it too has some healing properties. I add about 3 tablespoons of pelleted wax to the strained oil. Then I heat the jar in a microwave, again very slowly, being sure to just get the oil hot enough to melt the wax, and I stir to incorporate. So in other words, once you've got the infused oil, you add the beeswax to the infused oil, and you're going to stir it, because you just want it to dissolve that beeswax and get a little thick salve here is what you're after. So the jar is then left on the counter to set up for a few hours, and then I will test the consistency of it before calling it finished. The amount of wax to use depends on how firm you want your salve to be. A little less will make it make the consistency, of course, more runny, and a little more will make it a little more solid. And personally, I like mine spreadable to cover a large cut, but sticky enough not to run off the skin. This is a matter of preference and then practice. Just play around with the amount of wax added until it's like you want it. And then that's all there is to it. Now, although this salve is easy to make, I will end with alternatives in case some of the ingredients are not available for some reason, because you never know these days. But the great part about this is that all the ingredients can be made from natural sources you as a trapper probably already have on hand. The main ingredient, that is, the goldenrod will most likely always be available, so there's no need to replace that. But if commercial oil is not available, there's always natural sources of oil, such as oil rendered from fat. You could render beaver tail oil, hide fat from skinned animals, especially raccoon and other animals. You just render it down. Save it, save the oil so that you have the amount that you need. Now, for the wax, every trapper, not every trapper, not everybody uses trap wax, but many trappers use trap wax. But if you can't get it, you could use really heavy fats like leaf lard or kidney fat, or the internal fat surrounding organs of hogs or deers can be rendered down into tallow hard enough to thicken your salve. And remember, tallow was used to make candles in the past, so it is a good substitute for wax. Now, Ken, thank you. That's an excellent step-by-step, end-to-end submission there. That is going to help a lot of people, and I can promise you it has helped me. So thank you for sharing that. And, just a few comments. I mean, he's exactly right. There's so many things that you can do with different oil sources. You know, if you have access to a lot of beavers, you can make beaver tail oil, which is a great canine lure. I've got a video on my YouTube channel on exactly how to render beaver tail oil down, and it will drive canines crazy. It's great stuff. I've heard that people up north. Because, the law of latitude is that the farther north you get, basically the larger the animals become. And this is absolute fact. You get up north and some of those coons, man, they're like they're like bears. They're big compared to what we have down south. And of course, you trap a coon in the winter and everybody knows just how loaded with fat those things are. There are a lot of trappers that when they would be skinning their coons up north and they had a wood-burning stove, they would take that fat right off the fleshing beam and throw it right into the wood-burning stove and fire that stuff up. So, you can do a lot with that. And I recently purchased a bunch of the leaf fat from a grass-fed cattle operation here in Tennessee. And I rendered that down into lard, and man, you're talking about the most pure lard that you can imagine. There's when you make your own lard from kidney fat or leaf fat, you render it down. There's no comparing that to the garbage that you buy in the store. There's no comparing it. Lard gets a bad rap. People think, it's fried in lard. Well, if you have good quality lard, not the Walmart crap, but like the stuff that I render down myself. I mean, it is an outstanding way to fry things. And if you have that oil good and hot, that lard good and hot, not a lot of it gets soaked into the food, so it doesn't really add that much in the way of calories, there's a lot to be said for all of that. But back to the law of latitude, that is absolutely true. And, that's one of the things you get down south down here. And, some of these deer, these does are fairly small. And that was really brought home to me while I was up in northern Minnesota. We'd be out in the bush and you'd see, Eric and I were out there and you'd see these deer. And it was just phenomenal how big these things were. He was kind of chuckling at me. There'd be a couple of does on the side of the road or standing over in a field, and they were a year and a half old does or what have you. And from where I come from, those were huge does. They were as big as most of the bucks that we have here. And the same thing with the coons. You look at the coons that you get up north. And those things are 25, 30 pounds, and down here, you don't get anything like that, So it was really eye opening, and so the The one saving grace is that our numbers seem to be higher. In other words, if our animals are smaller, we seem to have more of them, at least in some regards. So for instance, you know, if you're trapping, you know, coons for meat, or you're shooting deer for meat, up there, you know, if you shoot one doe, down here you might shoot, you know, two or three to derive the same amount. And the same thing with the fat, you know. So keep that in mind. But really, when you think about the amount of fat and the amount of protein and everything that you can get off an animal, if you really utilize it, there's a tremendous bounty out there. In the same way with these plants, you know, when I first started looking and making a point to spot goldenrod, I mean, the stuff is everywhere down here. It's, you know, it's almost a noxious weed, really. And when you think about the medicinal uses of it, not only for salves, but like Ken said, go investigate the other uses yourself. You know, you can make tinctures and extracts and all of that, and it's good for sinus infections and all that sort of thing. I mean, the medicine chest is out there. The grocery store is out there. And I guess the one good thing about foraging for plants, at least, is the fish cops are not as hell-bent on making sure that you don't get anything or that you have to pay for it. But I don't want to get started on that. But it was interesting. I was looking through the rule book here in Tennessee the other day, and you pretty much have to have a college degree and a computer to figure out what's legal to hunt, where, and when in some of these cases. Everything is a preserve or a WMA, and there's this hunt and that hunt and on this day other than that day, and oh man, and you've got this type of license and that type of license, and you need the combination of this one and that one in order to do this on this day in this area. It's like, Jesus Christ, you know, just, I mean, and so they end up, down here at least, they end up selling what they call a sportsman's license. It's an all-in-one. It's $166, which I think is outrageous. But you buy that and you pretty much have everything that you need. So, but not to digress. But anyway, if you were a Patreon member, I would like to invite you to stay tuned for the second half of tonight's podcast. And if you are not a Patreon member, I'd like to ask that you consider becoming one. You can go to patreon.com/meattrapper and get all signed up and join the tribe, because we do have a lot of hardcore information that is not available anywhere else. And the main thing is the people that we have in our tribe are some of the finest people you're going to meet anywhere, and they're always willing to go out of their way to help each other and to help others. And that's the thing that I'm most proud of. And Eric is an excellent example of that. You know, I had never met Eric before. We'd corresponded through email or what have you, and invited me up, and he picked me up at the airport. When I got off the plane, he had everything packed. He had two canoes sitting on top of his car. Had all of the gear, had all of the food, had everything ready to go. Had the entire trip mapped out, and we had a blast. Just a blast. And like I say, I learned so much. Because it's not just going up there to paddle and go on a canoe trip, but it was an opportunity for me to see a part of the world that I'd never seen before, up close and personal, and to learn so very much. And for that, I'm grateful. And had a good time. He's quite the, I'll tell you one thing, Eric is one of the best, if not the best, campfire cooks I've ever seen. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because, you know, that's a lost art. With all the backpacking stoves and, you know, with all of the, freeze-dried meals and just add water and all of this ultralight backpacking stuff, it was great to get back to cooking over coals. And, you know, as Eric told me, he said, I'd rather cook over fire than I would on a stove any day of the week. And he just has a knack for having everything organized and getting everything on and off the fire at the right time so that it all comes together at the end, and especially when it was cold. The first 2 days, we had snow flurries. We were paddling with snow flurries into our face. So for me, you know, being a Southern boy, it was fairly cold, you know, getting down in the mid-20s at night. And so you've got to have your fire going, and you've got to have your stuff organized. So he was a great campfire cook. And he's also a pretty good shot with a slingshot when it comes to grouse. I don't know if, should I say that on an open broadcast? Maybe I should take that back. We won't talk about grouse and slingshots. And we definitely won't talk about grouse and 10mm Glocks. there's an inside story there, and we're just going to leave it at that. But anyway, if you're interested, check out Patreon. Give it some thought. We'd love to see you. And if not, we will see you next week. Thanks for listening. And if you're a Patreon member, hang on.
Since you ain't here, and there's frost on the beer, I guess you weren't talking about the frigid air, girl. Nah, you never liked my mom or my dog or my friends, and the worst is I never said one word when you told me to turn down the mirror. But I might have finally found something colder than as hell, and hell it helps me raise it. Took your goodbye and hell it done erased it. Girl, I ain't drowning your memory. These mountains are all that's in here getting blue. Baby, I might have finally found something colder than you. All we're better together, and that's something they never once said when